Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're diving into a really fascinating intersection. You've got a high-profile legal case meeting these fundamental principles of open government.
Exactly. It's a collision course, in a way.
Yeah, precisely. Our deep dive today is into a compelling Florida Circuit Court case from 1997, Church of Scientology Flag Service Org, Inc. v. Wood.
A landmark case, really, for public records law in Florida.
Definitely. So our mission here is to explore how a medical examiner's public statements, very public statements about an ongoing investigation, ended up impacting access to public records.
Particularly under Florida's Chapter 119, the Public Records Act. It's quite detailed.
It is. And given your expertise in open government law, we'll really get into the weeds on waiver and exemptions, which this case just illuminates brilliantly, doesn't it?
It really does. It sets some important precedents. So maybe we should start with the background, the facts that led up to this dispute.
Good idea. Set the stage for us.
All right, so it starts with a tragic event. On November 18th, 1995, a woman named Lisa McPherson was in a minor car accident. At the scene, she apparently exhibited some erratic behavior, even took off her clothes. She was taken to Morton Plant Hospital.
And they checked her out.
Yes, found no physical injuries from the accident, but there were concerns about her mental state. Potentially unstable? She was supposed to see a psychiatric nurse, but instead she signed herself out against medical advice.
Okay, where did she go?
She went to the Church of Scientology's Fort Harrison Hotel. Initially, it was described as being for rest and relaxation. Later, the term voluntary isolation was used. She was there for 17 days.
17 days? Yeah. Wow.
Then, tragically, on December 5, 1995, Ms. McPherson died. It happened while fellow church members were taking her to see a Scientologist physician in Newport Richey.
Oh, wow. So the autopsy, then?
The autopsy was performed the very next day, December 6th. It found the immediate cause of death was a thromboembolism, basically, a fatal blood clot in her lung.
And what caused that?
It was attributed to thrombosis in her leg vein, which in turn was linked to bed rest and severe dehydration.
Severe dehydration? That sounds significant.
It was. There were other findings, too. Multiple bruises, some old, some recent, and an abrasion on her nose.
Okay, so the autopsy happens in late 95. When does the report actually come out?
Well, the full report wasn't completed until October 1996, and it was disseminated, sent out to people who'd requested it on October 30th, 1996.
Sent out. But wasn't there an issue with that?
There was. Dr. Joan Wood, who was the medical examiner, later claimed that initial release was actually a mistake. She said it was due to her miscommunication with the Clearwater Police Department about whether the investigation was still considered active.
A mistake. Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, right? Because this case just blew up in the media.
Absolutely. It became huge.
So December 96, you start seeing articles in the Tampa Tribune, St. Petersburg Times, using information from that autopsy report, okay. The one that was supposedly released by mistake.
Right. The information was out there.
And then Dr. Wood herself starts talking a lot, making public statements about the autopsy, about Lisa McPherson's death. She even goes on TV, right? Inside Edition.
Yes. January 21st, 1997. She made some very specific, very stark claims.
What kinds of things did she say?
She said Lisa McPherson had, and I quote, "the most severe case of dehydration I've ever seen." She estimated Mrs. McPherson went without liquids for at least 5-10 days, maybe 17.
The entire time she was there?
Potentially, yes. Mm. She also stated McPherson was likely unconscious for 24 to 48 hours before she died. And she made a point to clarify other things, too.
Like what?
Like, she explicitly said Ms. McPherson did not die of an overwhelming staph infection, which might have been rumored. And she addressed insect bites found on the body, saying they were likely cockroach bites.
Cockroach bites? Good grief. Why was she being so public with these details, did she say?
She did. Dr. Wood claimed she felt she had to release these facts to counter what she described as a misinformation campaign by the Church of Scientology. She felt a duty, she said, to speak for the deceased.
Okay, so you have the ME being very vocal, the report already out there. What happens next legally?
Well, given all that publicity and Dr. Wood's statements, the Church of Scientology formally stepped in. On January 9, 1997, their attorneys filed a broad request for public records from the medical examiner's office concerning Lisa McPherson's death.
Under Chapter 119, the Public Records Act?
Exactly. Citing the act.
How did Dr. Wood respond to that request?
She responded really quickly, actually. The next day, January 10th, she agreed to release some things, like the personnel file of the associate medical examiner, clearly not part of the investigation itself.
But the core stuff, the autopsy info.
That, she claimed, was exempt. Why? because of an active criminal investigation. That's a key exemption under Section 119.073B.
Okay, so the battle lines are drawn. The church wants the records. The ME says no, active investigation. What was the church's main argument against that exemption claim?
Their core argument was waiver. They basically said, look, between Dr. Wood's extensive public commentary, the police department's statements, and the fact that the autopsy report itself had already been released.
Even if by mistake.
Right, even if by mistake. They argued all of that together constituted a complete waiver of the active criminal investigation exemption. Yeah. They felt the exemption couldn't stand anymore.
And they accused the officials of running a media campaign.
Yes, they contended that the ME and the police were trying the case in the media, essentially, trying to imply the church was responsible before anything was formally charged.
So how did Dr. Wood push back on that waiver argument? It seems pretty strong on the surface.
It does, but her counterargument was quite nuanced. What's fascinating here is she actually conceded a point. She agreed the initial mistaken release of the autopsy report did waive the exemption.
Ah, okay.
But, and this is crucial, she argued that waivers only applied to the report itself. It was limited, in her view, to the four corners of the report.
Meaning only the exact words in that document, nothing underlying it.
Precisely. She maintained the investigation was still active, you know, fulfilling the legal definition of continuing with a reasonable good faith anticipation of securing an arrest or prosecution in the foreseeable future. So the underlying files, the notes, the lab work, that should all still be protected.
Did she make any other arguments for keeping things confidential?
Yes, a few important ones. First, she argued that physical evidence, actual tissue samples, things like that, weren't even public records under the law because you can't copy them. The law talks about inspecting and copying.
Interesting distinction. What else?
She also pointed to Lisa McPherson's hospital records. She argued those were strictly confidential under Florida's patient privacy laws, Section 395.3025 in Earl. So even if she'd looked at them, she couldn't release them, period.
That makes sense.
And finally, she made a practical argument. Releasing all the underlying investigative documents would seriously compromise the case. You would essentially give potential defendants a roadmap to build their defense before charges were even filed.
So the court is facing this delicate balancing act. You've got the public's right to know, which Florida law calls sacrosanct and says should be interpreted broadly.
Right. Exemptions are supposed to be construed narrowly. Openness is the default.
But you're balancing that against the public's right to have effective criminal investigations. How did the court start to tackle this?
Well, first, they reaffirmed a basic principle of Florida public records law.
Mm-hmm.
Why someone wants the records doesn't matter. Your motivation is irrelevant. The right to access is there.
No need to justify your request.
Exactly. Then the court specifically noted this was a case of first impression in Florida, meaning no Florida court had previously ruled on this specific issue. Access to the data underlying a released autopsy report when no one had actually been charged with a crime yet.
So they were charting new territory.
They really were. The court acknowledged that, generally speaking, law enforcement can release some information selectively without blowing the exemption for everything else related to the case.
Oh.
Specifically, they said, if Dr. Wood had only released the autopsy report, even if by mistake, but made no further comment.
If she just stayed quiet after that.
Exactly. If she'd stayed quiet, that release alone would not have waived the exemption for all the underlying data. Not unless or until that info was given to a defendant or the investigation closed without charges.
But she didn't stay quiet. And that's the key point for our deep dive, right?
That is the absolute crucial distinction here. Dr. Wood did make extensive public comments after the report was out. So the court's big challenge was figuring out the scope of the waiver created by those comments.
And what did they find?
They found her public commentary did waive the active criminal investigation exemption, at least to some extent.
Mm.
But, and this is another critical nuance, the waiver was triggered only by her own statements.
Not by anything the Clearwater police might have said.
Correct. The court explicitly said the waiver applied only through her statements. Not those attributed to the police department or other investigators. It highlights how an individual official's actions can impact the exemption status for records they control.
Fascinating. So based on that finding, how did the court rule on the specific records the church requested? They went item by item, didn't they?
They did. Meticulously. It really shows the surgical precision involved.
Okay, let's take some examples. What about administrative stuff, like drafts of the autopsy report or notes taken during the autopsy?
For those, the court said, yes, they are public records, and no, they are not exempt anymore.
Why not exempt?
The court reasoned that releasing those drafts and notes wouldn't compromise the investigation because the final report, which is where all that information culminated, was already public. The horse was out of the barn on that specific info, so to speak.
Got it. But not everything administrative was released.
Right. Things like disposition sheets, records tracking the body, or logs for samples and lab results, those were considered public records, but they remain properly exempt.
And the reasoning there?
Dr. Wood hadn't made specific public comments about those tracking documents. And because they related to the chain of custody, which is vital in a criminal case, keeping them confidential served the purpose of the exemption. So no waiver for those specific items.
It really depends on what she talked about publicly.
Exactly. What about more direct evidence, like lab reports or photos?
Yeah, that's where the surgical aspect really comes into play. Take the reports from external labs, like Largo Medical Center or Wiestoff Labs. The court didn't just order the whole reports released.
Now, what did they do?
They ordered the release of portions of those reports, but only the specific parts that underlay Dr. Wood's public statement.
Ah, so only the data backing up what she actually said.
Precisely. Findings related to hydration, unconsciousness period, cause of death, blood clotting issues, the appearance and cause of those insect bites. Basically, if she talked about it publicly, the related lab data had to be released. The waiver was tied directly to her commentary.
Wow. That's specific. What about photos?
Same principle. Generally, autopsy photos would be covered by the exemption. But the court ordered that any photos specifically showing the insect bites had to be released.
Because she talked about the cockroach bites.
Exactly. Her comment waived the exemption for that specific visual evidence. Same logic for the microscopic slides. Generally exempt, but any slides relating to her comments on dehydration, lack of staph infection, insect bites, those had to be photocopied and released because she likely relied on examining them to make those public statements.
This is incredibly nuanced. It's not just waived or not waived. It's waived as to these specific details.
Exactly. Now, this brings us to that really crucial distinction the court made regarding physical specimens. The actual stuff from the autopsy tissue in cups, paraffin blocks with samples, blood, urine.
Right. The things you can't just photocopy. What was the ruling there? Unequivocal. The court ruled that these physical specimens are not public records, as defined by Chapter 119, full stop.
Not public records at all. Why?
The court's reasoning was pretty detailed. It looked at the definition in Chapter 119, which talks about materials made or received pursuant to law or ordinance in connection with the transaction of official business. And crucially, the Act's provisions focus on inspection and duplication, setting fees for copies of various sizes.
Things you can actually copy.
Exactly. Physical specimens can't be copied in the way the statute seemed to contemplate. The court felt the legislature just didn't intend for Chapter 119 to cover these kinds of non-copyable physical objects. They even pointed to the Florida Administrative Code, which distinguishes physical evidence and specimens from official records.
Makes sense textually. Were there other reasons?
Yes, big ones. Public policy and due process. The court stated very clearly that a criminal defendant's fundamental right to a fair trial and the public's right to an effective prosecution are superior to the public's right to inspect physical evidence at that stage. Why superior? What's the risk? Huge risks. Releasing physical evidence for public inspection creates risks of contamination, damage, losing the sample, breaking the chain of custody, any of which could completely torpedo a future criminal case. The court literally used the phrase nightmarish proportions to describe the chaos of allowing constant public handling of such evidence.
Okay, so the physical stuff itself, not public records, not releasable under Chapter 119. But what does this mean for you, the listener, trying to understand this? There's a twist.
There is. While the physical specimens weren't public records, the laboratory reports that detail the analysis of those specimens, those were declared public records.
Ah, the documented results, not the sample itself.
Exactly. And significantly following the pattern, those specific lab reports were ordered released, but only to the extent they related back to Dr. Wood's specific public comments, hydration, unconsciousness, bites, etc. It really underscores that line between the physical object and the documented information about it.
Okay, one last category, the hospital records. From Morton Plant and another hospital, what happened there?
The court handled those quite differently. It ruled that even though the medical examiner had these records, they were not public records in her possession because of Florida's very strict patient confidentiality laws.
Section 395.30254.
That's the one. The court basically said its hands were tied. It had no authority to order the release of those records, regardless of whether Dr. Wood relied on them or not. patient privacy trump the Public Records Act in this context.
So wrapping this deep dive up, this case, Church of Scientology v. Wood, it really gives us this incredibly precise, almost surgical view of how waiver works under public records law.
It absolutely does. It shows how public comments, even if an official thinks they're necessary or justified, can definitely pry open files that were previously locked tight under an exemption.
But not necessarily all the files.
Not at all. And it draws that critical legal line between documents and data you can copy versus physical evidence you can't. That's a vital distinction.
Yeah, it reinforces that while the public's right to know is powerful, sacrosanct even, in Florida law,
it's not absolute. There are carefully considered limits, especially when you balance that right against other fundamental rights like fair trials and the basic need to conduct effective criminal investigations without tipping your hand completely.
The court isn't just throwing open the doors, it's deciding exactly which key fits which specific lock based on what the official actually said publicly.
Well put.
So what's left for you, our listeners, to think about after this deep dive? This case really makes you wonder, doesn't it? When is the information truly out there, the horse out of the barn, versus when is it still protected, even if someone opened the gate a crack?
And maybe think about the implications. What does this very detailed, very specific interpretation of waiver mean for public officials today, especially in our hyper-connected digital world where a comment can spread instantly? How do they navigate releasing information responsibly?
Those lines between public duty, transparency protecting investigations, and now managing the impact of public statements, they seem finer and more complex than ever. Definitely something to mull over.